Good morning, Steve Dale on WGN. Where do you think Chicago fits among the pet-friendliest cities in America? Do you think Chicago's number one, number 21, number 41? What do you think? We'll find out where Chicago lands and why Chicago lands there. Dr. Kelly Ballantyne is here, Chicago-based veterinary behaviorist, which means you're the most important person in veterinary medicine because you're a behaviorist. But in it's my opinion. But in it, and my opinion matters. But in my opinion. But in addition to that, is a co-author of the book called Decoding Your Cat, which just came out, authored by yourself and many of your colleagues who are also veterinary behaviorists, actually from all around the world, contributed to this book. Now, Dr. Ballantyne, bear with me 20 seconds as I tell this story. Sure. Several years ago, I was walking down the hallway at a veterinary conference with one of your colleagues, Dr. Gary Landsberg, and he said, how do we get word out there about dog behavior? The real truth and the real science, not what some dude at that time was saying on television, mostly about dominance. And I said, write a book. Well, it turned out they did. You did. And that's called Decoding Your Dog. And following that book has come this book, Decoding Your Cat. Decoding Your Dog has still selling like crazy. So the hope is that this book will too. And I would believe that there's more need in some ways, Dr. Ballantyne, for this book, telling the truth about cat behavior, busting all these myths that people have about cats, than even the dog book. What do you think?
Yes, I absolutely agree. I think sometimes cats get overlooked and, you know, are just assumed to be these, you know, independent, you know, self-caring kind of animals that we don't really have to do much with.
And we're going to talk about why that is absolutely untrue in a moment. You know, but they're also supposed to be conniving. They're also supposed to be,
right.
You know, I mean, all of these things that people think about cats, and they're serious about it. I mean,
yeah.
I can't tell you, I don't know about you, because you're a guest on, I hate to say this, you cheat on me on occasion probably, and are on other radio shows. And I appear as a guest all the time on radio shows, and people ask me about cats, and they're quite serious when they say, some of them, that mm-hmm. cats are conniving. They are horrible pets because they want nothing to do with you. And
right.
all of these other things that are just so totally untrue. So one of the 7,000 things I like about Decoding Your Cat is that it kind of looks at these myths. You're a scientist, really, and
mm-hmm.
says, okay, here's why, in a way we can all understand, this is not true. So let's talk about some of this. If the cat is acting poorly, based on our definition, by scratching on the sofa, the cat, in my view, is just trying to cope. The only way the cat knows, it's really not about you as the pet parent. Am I on the right track?
Absolutely. And I mean, if we look at it, scratching is a totally normal, appropriate cat behavior. It's something that they do to leave scent marks around the home or around their home. It might also help with conditioning of their claws. So when they're scratching on our furniture, they're just engaging in a normal cat behavior. And it maybe points out that we're not providing them with an acceptable outlet ourselves. You know, if we don't want them to scratch the furniture, we have to find a option that is acceptable for both of us.
But what about people that swear to you, my cat is doing that because I was out of town for 4 days, or my cat is peeing in my shoe because I had my boyfriend over, or my cat is now doing number two next to the litter box because, I don't know, because I started smoking cigarettes again. And don't start smoking cigarettes again, friend. I don't know. Whatever these examples are all about us. They're not about describing what our cats need. And sometimes it may involve us because any change in a household can affect a cat.
Sure, absolutely. So There's usually other explanations that make more sense just in terms of what we know about cat behavior. But you're also right that even just simple changes in routine, such as changing what time you offer your cat food or skipping a play session, can actually cause your cat stress and then result in behaviors such as soiling outside of the litter box, or even things like vomiting. So, we usually have to just dig a little bit deeper rather than just assuming, oh, my cat's doing this to get back at me.
Right. And I think that's such an important point because I think it's human nature to take all these things personally, but,
yeah.
But it's really not about us, friends, not in the way that we're thinking. We have more cats than ever before in America, and more cats in America living indoors only than ever before. One chapter in the book, and actually in every chapter, I think enrichment is discussed, but there's one chapter that solely focuses on that. I think that you should sign a contract if you adopt a cat, whether that cat is from an animal shelter or the cat just comes to your door and says, I'm here, and you take the cat in, or you go to a cat breeder and get a pedigreed Maine Coon or Siamese or Ragdoll or whatever. I think there should be a contract that all people should sign and say, I am going to provide not only food and water, but an enriched environment. So do you agree that this is not important anymore, but necessary? And if so, what the heck am I talking about? What is enrichment?
Yes, so enrichment absolutely is necessary. It's essential, basically, for a cat's well-being. And when we think about enrichment, that means we're providing above and beyond just those essentials of, a roof over your head and a litter box and some food and water. We're providing or provisioning the environment with extras so the cat can engage in her normal cat behavior, such as playing, hunting, climbing, and having safe places to rest or hide.
So is enrichment encouraging species-specific behavior? The point is zoos do a really good job of providing enrichment for everything that lives there, from their river otters to their boa constrictors to their chimpanzees.
Exactly.
I would argue we don't do as good of a job for our dogs or cats at home very often.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, so what can we do to provide enrichment for our cats?
Well, I think we need to take a step back and think about the different types of enrichment that we might want or that we should provide. So we want to provide cognitive enrichment, something to allow our cat to exercise her mind. We also want to make sure that we're providing physical enrichment, which means we're paying attention to how we have the home environment set up so that we're giving our cat places to hide and places to climb and perch. We also want to think about sensory enrichment. So that's, enriching their sense of smell and taste and touch and giving them visual enrichment, such as like access to windows so they can watch the world outside of the home. And then we also have to think about social enrichment. So when we think about social enrichment, that means interactions with the other beings that are living in the house. And that includes, the humans in the household, as well as other pets that might be there. So there's lots of different options that we can use in some forms of enrichment. We'll actually tick a couple of those boxes. There's plenty that we can do in order to enrich our cat's lives.
So I want to go back and talk about some of these bullet points. One you mentioned is sensory enrichment.
Yes.
So how do we do that? That's so incredibly important and often overlooked by people that talk about enrichment, which is why I'm hanging on that one. Because cats, of course, their sense of smell is what it's all about.
Yes. Yeah. They communicate so much using scent, and they gain a lot of information using their sense of smell. So that means we also need to pay attention to the scents that we put in our house. So we want to avoid harsh smelling cleaning materials, We want to use basically as much fragrance-free options as we possibly can for cleaning the house, as well as, you know, in terms of cleaning the litter box and the types of litter that we use. We can also provide things like catnip. You know, about 50 to 60% of cats will respond to catnip. And for many of those cats, they have a really positive response where they might become playful or they might become relaxed. So that's another really great form of scent enrichment for cats.
All right. Now, the big question is, are we feeding our cats all wrong? We'll be back with Dr. Kelly Ballantyne, who will answer that question. She's a contributor to the new book, authored by members of the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, called Decoding Your Cat. Dr. Kelly Ballantyne on WGN, talking about the book, Decoding Your Cat. I was honored to write the introduction to that book, and what I wrote in this book is about my cat that I had many years ago named Ricky, and how I trained this cat. Train a cat? Who would do that? Why would you do that? But I did. I trained this cat to play the piano. Very social cat who loved, really loved, going out so much that if my wife and I went out with the dogs and left the cat behind, there really was some separation anxiety. And our neighbors would actually hear our cat scream like, "Where are you going?" And we would go out sometimes to Petco and PetSmart and do recitals, because not only could Ricky play the piano, but also jump through hoops and do all these other things. And has been on at that time, he's long since passed away, but has been on WGN radio playing his piano, on with Steve and Johnny, knocking the station almost off the air. But that's another story for another time. But it shows really how amazing Steve King is as a broadcaster, because he brought us back in like 3 seconds. But Ricky was quite the cat. Are more cats able to do more than we think about or give them credit for the possibility of them doing more? And was I crazy? Well, you know I'm crazy. But I mean, training a cat, who does that, Dr. Ballantyne?
Well, I definitely think more people should, because cats are definitely trainable and can be a really fun and enjoyable activity, not only for the cat, but also the person who's doing the training. And I don't think that we give enough credit, I think, to cats. I think a lot of times we assume that cats are these, you know, inactive, really lazy creatures, and certainly they do spend a significant portion of their day resting. But left to their own devices, if they weren't confined to our homes, if they were just living on their own, they would also be spending quite a bit of time hunting and foraging for food. So I think a lot of times cats end up being lazy or look like they're lazy kind of because of how we've set up their environment and how we feed them, rather than that being just who they are inherently.
That leads me perfectly into saying this, and I thank you for doing that for me. Are we indeed feeding our cats all wrong if we feed cats the most common ways, which I'm about to describe? It's mealtime. It's 5 o'clock. We look at our watch. We pour the food into a bowl. We measure it. And the cat eats, say, twice a day that way. And that's all the cat gets, except occasional treats. Or we leave out food all the time. We've got 4 cats in the house. We leave out food all the time, and the cats kind of graze and get what they want, and we become automatic food dispensers, and we keep filling it and filling it and filling it, not knowing which cat is getting what. I argue that either of those two ways are wrong. I don't know that you agree or disagree.
Well, I certainly think, you know, the first scenario that you laid out, just feeding a couple of meals a day, I mean, that presents some missed opportunities, because your cat is, you know, maybe taking up then 10 minutes of his day eating. And that is, you know, that's such a, just a small amount of, you know, the time that they have left to them. And if they were left to their own devices, they would be spending anywhere from 15 to 46% of their day looking for food and hunting. So we're, you know, we're wasting, we're not taking advantage of their desire to go hunt and look for food by just feeding them twice a day. Now, the second scenario where we leave food out and they can just kind of graze on their own, that maybe mimics their more natural style of eating because they would generally eat like 10 to 20 small meals per day. But it also can present some problems because some cats, like my former cat, if I had just left whatever amount of food out for him to graze all day long, he would just gulp all that down in one sitting anyway, and then he would have been extremely obese. So I think both feeding styles are problematic.
All right. So those are the most common ways to do it, and we're doing it wrong. So how can mm-hmm. we do it right?
Well, I think, you know, the best thing to do would be to introduce food puzzles to your cat's life. And so food puzzles are like, they can be homemade or they can be bought at the store, but basically a food puzzle is just a device where you put some pieces of food or treat in the container and the cat has to move it or bat it around with their paws in order to get the food to come out. So for cats that are really acclimated to using food puzzles, all of their food throughout the day can be placed in these and hidden around the house so that they can hunt and search for their food and manipulate the object, use their brain to eat. But if they have no experience with a food puzzle, we definitely have to acclimate them to eating in this style.
Mm-hmm. And it can take a while, and it's not mm-hmm. for every cat necessarily. So I say, all right, if your cat isn't crazy about that idea, okay, but add this idea to it and put treats at first in different places around the house and eventually substitute that with either moist food that you can put in those little plastic tops that you put over the moist food to keep it fresh in the fridge. Just turn it upside down and or any little thing that you can use. Put it at different levels, different heights, and the cats will search for those treats at first, but then eventually begin to put some food there, whether you use moist food or use kibble. Good idea?
Sure, absolutely.
Because we want to exercise our cats too. Most of our indoor cats, I'm glad they're indoors personally. I would suggest you agree. They're safe.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, they're safer that way. But do we also have a nation filled, you mentioned obesity, that's written about in the book, Decoding Your Cat, because definitely there's a tie here with everything we're talking about and also our cat's health. So while they are generally healthier indoors, we have a lot of obese cats. They don't need to be, do they?
No, they absolutely don't need to be obese. And we can encourage exercise and if we keep them lean, we're actually also more likely to have cats that are more active. So, the more obese they get, the less active they get, and then it just becomes this vicious cycle.
There's so much more in this book called Decoding Your Cat. So one of those things are a chapter about what happens when you get a little kitten. How do you acclimate that kitten? And what can you do to deal with a crazy kitten? And on the other end of the spectrum, senior cats. And our cats are living longer than ever before. You and I were talking about enrichment. I had the honor to write a chapter in a book myself about enrichment for seniors, including senior dogs, but also senior cats. Is that something we often overlook, figuring, okay, they're older, they don't need any of that stuff anymore?
It is overlooked, and in fact, we usually need to change, some of our routines or need to adjust the environment to help that senior dog or cat just be able to live as fulfilled of a life as possible. You know, we were talking earlier about making sure we have perches for our cats as part of a healthy environment. So once they get to be seniors, we might have to change the locations of those perches or move them lower to the ground or kind of increase the number of steps to help them get up to that perch.
We have a 17-year-old cat, so we put a chair that the cat can jump on, and then mm-hmm. the cat goes from there to the desk and goes from there to where the food is. That's when the cat is today 17. When the cat was 7, the cat would just jump up there,
Right.
But I guess we all get older. But no, we don't. We don't. We do not. The book is called Decoding Your Cat. veterinary behaviorist, Dr. Kelly Ballantyne. How can people find you if they're in the Chicago area?
Yes, so we are at insightfulanimals.com. That's the website of my behavior practice.
Insightfulanimals.com. She is very insightful. And incidentally, an incredibly talented photographer, Dr. Kelly Ballantyne, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Next week on the show, we are talking about veterinary medicine and how it's changed because of everything going on in the world. You may not actually be seeing your veterinarian, but you might be virtually. And we'll talk about some things we can do or that veterinarians might even be able to do better and more easy and more comfortable and convenient for us virtually. And an example of that happened actually with our cat. So we'll talk about that, our 17-year-old cat, Roxy. So I will talk about that with Dr. Natalie Marks and Dr. Rosemary Logaitis next week on the show. So where does Chicago fall here among Wallet Hub's list of the most pet-friendliest cities? What do you think? Do you think Chicago's number one, number 51, number 101? What? Take a guess. Number 43. So not as nice as I would like to see it. Chicago... ranked number 89. That kills us. We're for a pet budget. In other words, things are expensive here. Do I need to really tell you that? Number 6 when it comes to pet health and wellness, which is a good thing. So we're paying for veterinary medicine that is really, really good. And for pet friendliness, which includes dog parks and other things, we rank number 49, which is, you know, somewhere kind of in the middle of the pack. So what do you think the pet-friendliest city is? Of all the cities in America, the pet-friendliest city. Drum roll, please. Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to leave you in suspense. I'm going to start at number 5 and work up to number 1. Actually, I'll start at number 6. Number 6 is St. Louis. And that doesn't come as a surprise to me because I know there's such a focus there with animal shelters as well as with dog parks and dog-friendly areas. Number 5 is Seattle. Number 4 is Orlando, which came in number 4 when it came to pet health and wellness. Number 3, let's shoot the dice, Las Vegas. And Las Vegas turns out to have more outdoor pet-friendly areas than any other city in the country, even though it is probably too hot half the year to use any of those spaces. Austin, Texas is number 2. And number 1, now the drum roll, the pet-friendliest city in America, ladies and gentlemen, it's Tampa, Florida. Woo! How many of you might have guessed that? Now, Chicago does very, very well, by the way, when it comes to animal shelters. Not only the number of animal shelters per capita, but the effectiveness of adopting out and fostering out animals at those animal shelters. So Chicago, for that, is actually number 3. Number 2 is San Diego. And number 1, that's what I said about St. Louis. Number 1, I hate to say anything good about St. Louis, but St. Louis is number 1 when it comes to animal shelters per capita. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN, back at the same time, same station, next week.